This is FNX.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back with another exciting episode of Slamcast, and I have my buddy Phil Money here.
Woo-hoo.
Today we're going to talk about our picks for the 2017 Hall of Fame. Now I'm going to go through my list and give you the name and why I think this should go in there, and then Phil Money will go through his and his reasoning. Number one for the celebrity, Lemmy for Motorhead. Because not just because he passed away, but because his love for the business and just the contribution that he made with the music. Because, I mean, these artists that do these themes, they don't have to do them. They do them to benefit the wrestlers. They do it because they love the business. As we all know, wrestling themes can make a guy. It really can. Triple H and Lemmy were really good friends. I've always been a fan of Motorhead to begin with. Mm. You know, I've always loved their music. So he would be more than deserving to be in the celebrity wing. The fabulous Rougeau. Was it Rougeau?
Rougeau.
Yeah, I always say that wrong. The Rougeau brothers. They were a tag team that were, you know, obviously French. They were heels the majority of their career. They were just an interesting tag team. I remember at one point they would carry out the little American flags, you know, because they were like, "Oh, we love America," you know. And I'm like, "Oh, whatever." But they were entertaining. Mm-hmm. There for a while, they actually did the French announce table at the pay per views.
Yeah. And then of course, Raymond went on to be the Mountie.
Yeah. Like Quebec, which that failed.
Yeah.
The Beverly Brothers. The Beverly Brothers was also a very interesting tag team because they were heels, but they also were the type of heel that was like not really evil or dastardly. They would do things that would make you kind of laugh. You know, they would have, you know, just as an example, they'd have a match, let's say, with you know, Jimmy and Vol and Brett, you know, when they were faces or whatever, you know. And they would do things like, you know, trip the guy. Classic things that were heelish, but were still entertaining. The match itself. They were, to me, in the era of tag teams that you looked forward to a tag team match. It wasn't just a secondary match to a pay-per-view. It was, okay, we're going to watch this tag team match because it's going to be entertaining. Does not matter if it's for the tag team titles, but it's still going to be good. British Bulldog, I mean, you don't even have to explain, but I will. Former Intercontinental Champion, European Champion, Tag Team Champion with Dynamite Kid, member of the Hart Foundation. The guy was a legend. Still is. For whatever reason, don't know, he has not been inducted. His match at SummerSlam 92 for the Intercontinental title will always live on as being, you know, fantastic. His last run that he had when he had cut off his hair in late 98-99 was kind of iffy. You could obviously tell, you know, from being in the ring for so many years, he'd also been abusing painkillers, which was ultimately led to his death. He was, of course, you know, he married the sister of Brett, so, I mean, he was part of the Hart family. To me, his character, even in WCW, even though his, you know, he was British, he had the pride of his country, but it wasn't the typical, he respected America too. You know, American fans loved him as well.
Mm.
So it wasn't like, you know, I'm, you know, British, which means I automatically hate Americans. You guys have to hate me too. He was just, there was a lot of, very charismatic. There was a lot of energy in his matches. There always was. I always thought it was kind of funny that he had dreads. That kind of cracked me up. I was like, okay, this is interesting. A British guy with dreads, but hey, whatever.
Right.
Rick Rude. Ravishing Rick Rude. Why is this guy not in the Hall of Fame? Legend in WCW and in the NWA. Legend in WWF for his feuds with Warrior, Jake the Snake. I mean, the list goes on. He was the stereotypical playboy. He'd come out there. He'd have the you know, the heelish, like, saxophone music where he'd dance. He'd always cut promos and tell people that were, they were disgusting, and that his physique was so much better. And then, you know, of course, he went on to have the major managerial role of DX. Mm. Then he went to WCW for the NWO. He was a good talker.
Yeah. Well, he also did pretty good early on in WCW, too, after he left WWF.
Yeah.
Went to WCW. Dangerous Alliance.
Yep.
Had his feud with Sting.
Yeah.
That, so.
See, a lot of people don't realize that he had fame before he even came.
Mm.
And after, when he left. And that, you know, the infamous pose down with him and Warrior.
Yeah, I remember.
It wasn't even a match. But people were going nuts over it.
Yeah.
He had Bobby Heenan as his manager, which was a good compliment, but he really didn't need somebody to talk for him.
Right.
But, I mean, it helped. I want it to happen. I wanted it to happen for years. Now that the lawsuit's over with the Hart, Martha, his widow, the King of Hearts, the Nugget, Owen Hart. Now, even though towards the beginning of his career, he was known as a high flyer, a technician, that goofy tag team he had with Coco Beware, high energy, where they had the neon pants and the checkered.
Mm.
His matches with Brett, you know, obviously, his time in the Hart Foundation.
Winning the Slammy Awards.
Yeah, winning the Slammy Awards. I love his speech. I want to thank myself. I did it. It was all me. Woo! His time in the Nation.
Tag team with Yokozuna.
Yeah. See, I don't believe, I mean, people could say that he lived in the shadow of Brett. He did a little bit, but he rose above it.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I know a lot of people, like, he was funny on the mic. He really was.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, the tragic accident, Kansas City, Missouri, May 23rd, 1999.
Man, who I always wondered what would happen with Owen Hart if he didn't pass away.
Would
he, do you think he'd still be involved with WWE?
I think right around when he passed away, he was still teaming with Jeff Jarrett.
Mm. Oh, he was the Blue Blazer.
Yeah, he was the Blue Blazer. Which, the Blue Blazer was actually the debut character of Owen Hart many, many years
before. I think eventually, though, after that gimmick, he would have went back to Owen Hart.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, the King of Hearts or something. I think he would have been a heel.
Yeah. I think what really did him in, Vince was so pissed off about Brett leaving that...
Maybe they would have done nothing with him.
Well, see, what happened, which, you know, a lot of people forget... The main reason why Brett left was because he signed a 20-year contract. Vince was like, you know, hey,
we got to restructure
this.
Money.
We can pay you this much. If you want to leave, I understand. And then the whole, you know, Montreal Screwjob, blah, blah, blah. After Brett left, Owen was in a position where he was left holding the bag.
Mm.
Whether he wanted to have it or not, Brett was his brother. He was stuck there, you know, doing the tag team stuff, doing the Blue Blazer stuff, would he ever have been heavyweight champion material? By God, yes.
Yeah.
He could have easily held the WWF title, and people would have been... Because in actuality, Owen actually had a bigger physique than Bret did. In my opinion, and I did a video of this on YouTube, and a lot of people were pissed off. I know people have this idea in their head, and they see it with rose-colored glasses. I thought Owen was better than Bret. I know a lot of people will disagree with me on that.
Well,
I thought he was.
I think Bret's problem was he was kind of like Hulk Hogan. Like, Hogan was stuck being the face, you know?
Yeah.
He's got to be cheered. And then what helped Bret get away from that was the persona of Vince and just...
When he did the heel turn.
The Hart Foundation.
Yeah. And that changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
But by then it was too late, though.
But before that, he was stuck being the clean
smiley
cuts.
Face,
yeah.
You know, hey.
I'm a Hulk Hogan replacement.
Basically. Yeah, basically that's what he was. And Owen, for the most part, was a heel his entire career.
Yeah.
If you really look at it. I mean, there was glimpses of, like, you know, when he did the high energy and... Oh,
that was the last time he was a face. And
yeah.
And then he started the whole thing with Bret.
Yeah.
And then he's just been ill, or was ill ever since.
Because I asked that same question like you did of, if that accident had not happened when it did. Because around that time in 99, you had Taker and Austin, you had Triple H that was on
coming
his way up.
And The Rock.
Yeah, The Rock. All these guys.
I don't think Owen would have been in the main event scene, but I think he would have been a high mid-carder, like IC title type.
Yeah. It was unfortunate because Owen had been around for so long.
Well, when
he
died, he was fighting for the IC title, right? Yeah, against the Godfather. Mm-hmm. So I think he would have won, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know. It's really weird to think on how wrestling has changed since that happened.
Yeah.
So many things have changed. Even though, think of how many people they could have put Owen against. You know, we could have seen,
hell, you could have seen Owen versus Shane. I would have loved that.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a good
one. We could have seen even, Chris Jericho versus Owen Hart.
Mm.
Because Jericho came in later that year.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many. I mean, even in the mid-2000s, how many people he could have put over and that they would have benefited from his knowledge of being in the ring. So, now that the lawsuit is over, Owen Hart needs to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Bret and the rest of the family have already said, water's under the bridge. They are more than willing. If Vince calls and says, hey, we want to put your brother in the Hall of Fame, they're all for it.
I think it would, putting him in, I think it would take a lot of relief off wrestling fans. And just like when Savage was finally inducted.
Yeah.
That was
really, yeah, that was awesome.
It seemed like it let out a lot of relief for
fans.
Yeah, it did. You know, for fellow wrestlers. Just like the Ultimate Warrior getting it.
Yeah.
I mean, those two guys, I didn't think they would ever
do that. I didn't either.
But
it was shocking. It really was. My two guys, obviously you're not going to induct them both at the same time. Maybe this year the rumor was possibly Undertaker. I don't even have to talk about the Undertaker. I mean, the name itself pretty much explains it all.
He's pretty much had a Hall of Fame spot locked down for like the past 10, 15 years.
Yeah. The other thing is Kane.
Mm.
Even though Kane's only been there since 97, up until like the last, like what, 4 or 5 years, he was relevant the entire time.
Mm.
They changed his gimmick a little bit each time to evolve with the times. He did the comedic angles with different people. With he, you know, remember when he Rob Van Dam gave him a Hungry Hungry Hippos game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's there's just so many things that he's contributed to. Mm. But
I mean, he's had, you know, of course, a memorable feud with Taker.
Yeah.
That, you know, he had the whole thing with DX and Xbox as a tag team, and then feuding with Triple H. And then, of course, by the time he took off the mask, he was feuding with the McMahons.
Mm-hmm.
And RVD, and
even when he became World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah.
Which, up until that point, the title that he won from Stone Cold, he held it for like 2 days.
Not even that.
Yeah.
He lost it the next night.
So it was like, oh, okay.
One of the shortest title reigns. Yeah. Which is sad for someone like
but,
him.
But go ahead and read your list off and give your reasons as to why you think they deserve a spot.
Okay. All right. So my list is kind of half-assed, I guess. I don't know. Kind of thrown together, but and I forgot to put a celebrity, so I'm going to jot one down here. I had to look to see if he was in the Hall of Fame.
Regis Philbin?
Yep. How'd you know?
I just guessed.
Okay, so yeah, that's my celebrity pick, Regis Philbin. If you're not familiar, Regis was a big part of the WWF back in the 90s.
I would have picked Bob Uecker.
Well, I just read online Regis was a rumor for this year's Hall of Fame, but I almost picked Uecker, but I think Philbin had a more of an impact.
Yeah. Not TNA impact.
Yeah. But, yeah, Regis Philbin, you know, he had the wrestlers on Regis and Kathy Lee.
Yeah.
He's been at WrestleMania, has had stuff to do with that, so I think he's a perfect candidate for the celebrity part of the Hall of Fame 2017. There's still some managers out there that need to get in. Was there any managers this year? I don't think there was.
I don't think so.
But I was thinking of like a manager you could put in. And one name that came across, I think I mentioned his name earlier in the last podcast, Harvey Whippleman. If you're not familiar with Harvey Whippleman, I believe he made his debut when he managed Sid. That was his first
guy
he managed. Sid Justice, when Sid Justice, a.k.a. Psycho Sid, turned heel against Hogan. You know, that was the guy leading him to battle against Hogan. And then their team kind of, Sid left, I think, went back to WCW or whatever. And then he took over Kamala, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Kamala and Kimchi.
Yeah, him and Kimchi were a big part of Kamala. When he was facing the Undertaker, he also managed Adam Bomb for a short time.
And then his name in WCW was El Gigante, but
Giant Gonzalez. Giant Gonzalez. So he always had these guys he wanted to do battle with Taker, kind of before DiBiase started the battle with Taker.
Yeah.
So he had Kamala, Giant Gonzalez, like I said, Adam Bomb for a short time. I thought he had a couple others, but I can't remember. And then eventually he turned into a referee, and believe it or not, he's a former
women's champion. Yep.
Yeah.
Harvina.
Harvina. Yeah. That happened.
Yes.
So I think, you know, if they're going to go back with putting managers in there, he's a perfect candidate. He's one of the last remaining managers that they don't have in there. And then for the women... You didn't pick a woman.
Oh, for the women, really quick, I'd have to say, just off the top of my head, Beth Phoenix.
Okay, yeah, that's who I was going to go with. There's only a handful of women that come to mind that could be in the Hall of Fame. Beth Phoenix is one. You know, Molly Holly, you got Tori Wilson, Victoria, maybe. Those are the only ones. But I think Beth Phoenix deserves a spot. She was a hell of a women's wrestler, women's champion. How many times she had the title? A couple? Two or three?
Three, I think.
Three? Okay.
She's also the wife of Hall of Famer Edge.
Edge, yeah. You know, she was famous in her little thing, her little fake relationship with Santino Marella, the Glamazon, Glamorella, or whatever they call themselves. So, yeah, I think she's a perfect candidate for the woman part of the 2017 Hall of Fame. And then I'm going to go with you with Owen Hart. I think it's his time. It's long overdue. As you know, as long as all this stuff with the Hart family settled with, you got to put him in. I mean, you finally got the Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage in. It's time for Owen Hart for sure. You know, pretty much everything that can be said, and Nick's already said there. And then since it's in Miami, right? Miami, Florida.
Yep.
Okay. I said they got to have a little Latino influence. And the only guy that came across.
Or actually, I think it's in Orlando.
Is it Orlando? I thought it was Miami.
Hell, I don't know.
Well, anyways, since they're in Florida, you know, you got to have a Latino influence. I mean, you already got Eddie Guerrero in there. You already got Pedro Morales in there. You know, this may not be a popular name, or if you may not agree with me, Savio Vega. He was in the WWE for, about 5 years?
Something like that. He was with the Los Baracas.
Yeah. Well, he started out as a face. He was kind of like the Yang to Razor's Yin or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of battled for a short time, and then he moved on to face, like, remember that match he had with Stone Cold? He battled with the Million Dollar Corporation for a short time. He had that that strap match with Stone Cold. This was when he was the ringmaster, actually. DiBiase was still his manager. The lights went out. Remember that? It was at one of the In Your Houses. And then Steve Austin lost, then DiBiase would be out of town. And then, you know, supposedly Steve Austin said he lost because he hated DiBiase, etc.
Yeah.
So that was a memorable feud for Vega. He had the IC title once or twice, didn't he? I believe he did. And I think he had the tag title for one time too. I can't remember who was.
He was a talented guy, tag team. But he just
didn't have a character.
Yeah,
he was just kind
of
there.
Well, he was actually in the Nation of Domination.
Yeah, too. After his face stuff, he joined the Nation because he's all pissed off because him and Crush joined because they weren't really doing anything with him, and they were just basically pissed off, just like Farouk was. You know, they did their battles with LOD and Ken Shamrock and Ahmed Johnson, of course. And then the Nation got to the point where they were bickering. Farouk fired everybody except for D'Lo Brown.
Yeah.
And then he reformed the Nation, of course, with D'Lo Brown, The Godfather, eventually The Rock, Mark Henry, and then Owen Hart joined. And then, of course, you had the gang battles. Savio had his gang of the Los Boricuas. They were around for about a year and a half, I think. That was in, like, 97.
Yeah, it was
kind
of like a Latin version of the Black Panthers.
Then you have the Disciples of Apocalypse, too, with Crush and Chains and A-Ball. But, yeah, Los Boricuas, Savio was the leader. And then that was kind of like his end time. But he had a lot to do with the wrestling of Puerto Rico. I think he has his own company out there. So he's still very much involved with wrestling.
That's where he gets stabbed a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, I think if you're going to have a Latino influence, since they're in Florida in the Hall of Fame, I think Savio Vega is a perfect candidate. And then, you know, they get to the point where they throw in random names, like when you have the Big Boss Man or the Godfather or Coco Beware, stuff like that. And I was coming across a wrestler that is, I think, from Florida, I believe, Mike Rotunda. He's a.k.a. Ern R. Seister. A.K.A. Bray Wyatt, Bo Dallas's father. You know, he's been around a while. He started out in that tag team with Barry Windham in the 80s. What was their name?
William and Rotunda.
Yeah. The U.S. Express or something.
Yeah, their theme was actually Hogan's theme before Hogan had it.
Yeah, yeah. They had the tag team titles. They ended up losing them to Iron Sheik and Boris... Boris Karloff, not him.
Nikolai Volkov.
Yeah. Him. Yeah, they were famous for losing the tag titles to them in the mid-80s. He kind of hung around after that, and then he started the character of IRS, the tax man.
Money Inc.
He ended up starting out as IRS. He joined forces with Million Dollar Man near the tail end of his career. They joined together as Money Inc. with Jimmy Hart as their manager.
Tag
titles for, I think,
also,
two or three.
He had a really memorable feud with Razor because he stole Razor's gold chains and melted it down or something. I don't know. He stole his chains and had them in the briefcase.
In the briefcase,
because his briefcase was always his weapon all the time.
Yeah, he had that briefcase. you know, he had his promos about not paying your taxes and you tax cheats, and he played that role pretty well for kind of a joke character.
Yeah.
And then eventually he goes back to WCW as excuse me. was it BK Wall Street or whatever?
Yeah.
He had that kind of like, you know, money whatever gimmick. And then he ended up joining the NWO for a short time. And then I think he pretty much retired after that. And then I think he's been like an agent ever since. I don't know if he still is. I think he still is an agent for WWE. A guy, you know, sets up the matches. So I think he's highly deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. You know, he's had a lot to do with WWE, WCW. And then, like I said, he's the father of Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas. So his legacy is still intact, still current. And then for the tag team, I don't know if these guys are ever getting in. I say this every year, every freaking year. Demolition. By far, they were the most popular tag team in the late 80s, going into like 1990.
Here comes the smash.
Before LOD came in and run their push. That pissed me off. I wish LOD never came in, honestly. I wish Demolition would have been just the main tag team. I mean, you know, you had Heart Foundation. They ended up turning face and, of course, winning the titles from...
And LOD wasn't even in there long. They were in there a couple of years.
They were only there for... They came in 91.
Yeah. And then they left like 92. 93-ish. Yeah. They weren't there very long.
They went back to WCW, I think.
Yeah.
And then they came back to WWE as LOD. Anyways, Demolition, they had the tag team title 3 times. Like I said, one of the most popular tag teams. Everyone knew the theme music. You know, they started out as heels. They had Fuji as their manager. Then they did the famous double face heel turn with the Powers of Pain. Fuji turned his back on Demolition, joined the Powers of Pain. Mm-hmm. They had their battles. Fuji even fought in a match.
Yeah.
You know, Demolition came out on top. They ended up losing the titles to the freaking Brainbusters, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson.
Yeah. And as of right now, they hold the record for the longest tag team reign.
And then you said you think the New Day is going to break that record.
Yeah, supposedly.
I hope not. But, yeah, like you said, they lost titles to the Brainbusters, won them back, lost the titles to the team of Andre the Giant and Haku, and then won them back. And that was at WrestleMania 6, and I love watching that. It's not that, by all means, it's not that great of a match, but when they win those titles, that is like one of the biggest pops I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah.
They had Hulk Hogan type pops.
Yeah.
Ultimate Warrior type pops. Oh, that's how popular they were.
And it wasn't cheap pop like Faygo.
Right, yeah. But they got the pops. They were pretty popular. You know, everyone said they were an LOD knockoff, which may be true, but they played the role perfect. Had the great promo.
Well, except when they added Crush.
Well, that's when they turned heel. They had to add Crush because Axe was supposedly dealing with that illness, and that's what killed their momentum.
Yeah.
You know, they had to add that third member, and then, of course, by that time, LOD came in, so they had to turn Demolition heel. You know, of course, Demolition, unfortunately, lost the titles to the Heart Foundation, ended up feuding with NLD. LOD for a short time. I don't think it was even that long of a feud, to be honest.
It wasn't.
I think they basically squashed him. And then eventually Axe was out of WWF. Crush became Kona Crush. And then
Smash became the Repo Man. Which was a joke on its own.
Yeah, and then eventually Smash went to WCW, had that, wasn't like a golfer gimmick?
Something goofy. Like that. Yeah.
Oh, he was a Blacktop Bully too.
Yeah.
When he fought Dusty Rhodes. AKA Goldust.
Yeah.
Dusty Rhodes.
Remember that truck match they had going down the road?
Yeah, that was when he got fired.
Yeah.
He got fired.
Yeah.
Because they weren't supposed to cut.
But
yeah. Demolition, you know, like I said, they're one of my favorite tag teams. You know, I always mimicked them, you know, hearing their song and trying on the face paint and, you know, doing the fake wrestling like them and stuff. So, you know, it's high time that they're in the Hall of Fame. And if they're not in it next year, I'm just going to be like every year, just severely upset. And then, since they're in Florida, honestly, it's time to put him in. Just put him in while he's in Florida. The Rock, of course. It's either down to him or Taker, and I think since they're in Florida, it's going to be The Rock. I still think Taker's going to do one more match at Mania. So I don't
think The Rock's pretty much done wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's done wrestling. You know, he may still make his appearances. But, of course, we all know The Rock. We all know how he came up as Rocky Johnson's son. He was the smiley rookie that everyone ended up not giving a shit about. Die, Rocky, die. Then he turns heel, joins the Nation of Domination, finds his true character, creates The Rock persona, joins the corporation, and then it just took off from there. It became a face.
Do you remember the promo that him and Jericho cut on Rhino and Booker T? Mm-mm. Where they were having a little contest out there. Jericho comes out, The Rock comes out there. This was around the invasion angle. And it's like, we all know Booker T. Little bus comes out there, honks a horn. Mer, mer. He goes to school and he's like, 2 + 2. Do you know the answer, Booker? Thomas Jefferson, sucker.
But yeah, The Rock, you know, he's a classic, does great promos, great matches. Yeah, he's if he's not in there this year, I think he's going to be in there next year. I said, but I don't think Taker's going to be in there, or not this year, next year, I mean. I don't think Taker's, I think he's doing one more match. I think he's going to do one more, and I think it's going to be against John Cena. I think they're going to set it up, and it's finally going to happen after all this time they've been wanting to do it. I don't want it, but, you know, I'd be happy if Taker was finally done.
Well, that feud they had on SmackDown years ago in 2002 was
good. That was a long time ago. That's true. Taker is older now. He's a shell of his former self.
He's in good shape, though. Better than he was at the Brock Lesnar match. He's in pretty good shape.
Yeah. But I think this is going to be his last match.
I hope so.
And then I think it's going to be kind of like the passing of the torch to Cena. And eventually Cena is going to pass the torch on to the next person.
Yeah.
I think that's how they're going to set it up as. And then Taker's going to finally retire and then just hang the boots up. Because he's got to. He's in his early 50s, 51, I think, 52. Yeah. It's time to hang it up. You know, he's got knee problems. You know, he's not much. The streak's over.
Yeah, it's.
You don't have to protect it. You don't have to keep going.
He has nothing left to prove. Yeah. He's good to go.
So, but I think Rock is going to be in 2017, Taker's going to be 2018, and then, yeah, from there. So that's my list: The Rock, Demolition, Beth Phoenix, Harvey Whippleman, IRS, Owen Hart, Savio Vega, Regis Philbin, and then Dr. Nick has, Owen Hart, Rick Rude, Bulldog, Rougeau Brothers, did you say Beverly Brothers?
Yeah, either one or the other.
Kane, Taker, Lemmy, and then, who's Roman? Beth Phoenix.
Yeah.
That's for predictions. I mean, obviously, they could change here over the next few months because we got a ways to go until WrestleMania. Ways to go.
Yeah. But, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of Slamcast, and we'll see y'all later.
Hey, this is Jake Johnston from the world's almost finest podcast on the FNX Network, reminding you that if you've yet to check out our show, what are you waiting for?
Ghostbusters song is so iconic.
No, I'm not talking about the physical.
We're about the fist fight right now.
I can say that because I paid to see her in a concert with the Backstreet Boys, and she played for 10 minutes. F*** her.
The World's Almost Finest podcast talks about a plethora of different subjects, whether it be movies, television, comic books, video games, or anything else that might pop into our brains at a moment's notice.
If you're not going to have a sequel, what's worse is having a prequel.
Think about it. Anakin was like a chest and a head. That's pretty much all Obi-Wan left of him.
Basically, a chest, a torso, and a neck, and a head.
I mean, he almost had as much left as RoboCop.
And you never quite know who just might stop by to join in on the conversation.
This is the Monster Abyss from Impact Wrestling.
We are the Meek Sisters. My name is Olivia.
And my name's Alana.
Well, I'm Mike Finkelstein, co-creator of Dodeca System.
I'm currently standing here with artist Brooke Allen. She does the
artistry for a little comic book called Lumberjanes, and I'm thankful you're able to join me here for this.
Oh, thankful to be here.
Check out the world's almost finest podcast on the FNX Network.
That's kind of awkward, isn't it?
A little bit.
Here's where the action is.
Wrestle Radio Australia.
Here's where the action is.
Three shows, one network.
Here's where the action is.
Healing Out with Muhammad Ali Vaez.
Just enjoy the ride with this particular long-haired Persian house husband.
Axe Cast with Josh the Axe Shooter.
Hey guys, make as much noise as you can.
Sleep.
Don't fucking say anything.
You can edit this out, right?
Yeah.
And WRA with me, Josh Armour, and the wordsmith, Sean Fuster.
That was a crazy show, and I'm glad we survived it to come here.
Backstage, people are yelling out, "Oi, the show's bloody started!" And I'm downstairs getting a photo shoot done. And I was like, "Oh, shit!"
All of this is yours for free. Subscribe to Wrestle Radio Australia on iTunes or check us out on fnx.network. Wrestle Radio Australia, it's where the action is.
Hey everybody, this is Bunkhouse Bob.
And lovely Laura.
And you are listening to Live from the Armory Wrestling Radio Show, heard exclusively here on FNX.network.
Y'all better listen.